What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to The Katie Helper Show, and I'm your host, Katie Helper. If you like the show, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And as always, remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. To support the show, visit patreon.com/The Katie Helper Show, where for just $1 a month, you can help make the show happen. And for $5 a month, you'll qualify for great bonus content, including alternative podcast feed and rarely seen clips that aired on our live shows. Thank you so much, Dr. West, for joining the show again.
Well, my dear sister, it's always a blessing and joy to be in dialogue and conversation with you.
Thank you. I want to start off talking about the genocide in Gaza. And of course, Kamala Harris recently got some, I would say, undeserved credit for appearing to call for a ceasefire. She made this announcement at the Edmund Pettus Bridge. So I'm just going to show you a clip of her and then ask you to react to her.
And given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire. For at least the next 6 weeks, which is what is currently on the table. This will get the hostages out and get a significant amount of aid in. This would allow us to build something more enduring, to ensure Israel is secure, and to respect the right of the Palestinian people to dignity, freedom, and self-determination.
So it sounds good, but I wanted to know your thoughts on this and the fact that she is announcing really a pause.
Right. Well, you know, the first thing that hit me, my dear sister, was that the Biden administration does not have an ounce of morality. It does not have a dose of integrity. That we've got nearly 30,000 precious folk killed, nearly 14,000 precious Palestinian babies murdered. And now they want to come out and talk about the scope of the devastation. You see, this is typical garden variety political lingo, given the pressures that they're beginning to feel, no ethical motivations whatsoever. They continue to enable a genocide and going to drop food in, enable a genocide and stand there on ground consecrated by Black freedom fighters who were crushed by cowardly white supremacists. That's where she makes that statement. They sacrificing everything. She and Biden, and not just her and Biden, but it's Austin. We can go right down the list. Kirby, it's Sullivan, it's Greenfield. All of these folk have been enabling one of the most barbaric genocides that we know. And now they want to act like they received some moral prize for calling for a ceasefire. Please, it's pathetic. It really is. It's pathetic. And we have to just keep it in the right context and understanding the level of mendacity, the level of manipulation of words while precious human beings are being crushed this very moment, genocide in real time. Please, Sister Harris, get off of your soapbox where you're acting like you Fannie Lou Hamer, you nothing but an agent of the American Empire, please. That was my response to it. I was very upset about it. I remain upset about it, you know?
And yes, and there's an article, actually, a Politico. The headline is Harris's ceasefire remarks were aimed at Hamas. And it says, Vice President Kamala Harris's call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza this weekend has been widely touted as her getting tougher on Israel, especially in clips on cable news and social media, but it's clear from either watching or reading her full comments that Hamas was the main target of her Sunday remarks in Alabama. And what she said was, the threat Hamas poses to the people of Israel must be eliminated. Given the immense scale of suffering, there must be an immediate ceasefire. And then, of course, she cynically, I would say, paused so people could clip it there, and goes on, for at least the next 6 weeks, which is what is currently on the table. Hamas says it claims it wants a ceasefire. Well, there is a deal on the table. And as we've said, Hamas needs to agree to that deal. And then John Kirby, who you just referred to, National Security Council spokesperson, told reporters today that there's no daylight between Harris and President Joe Biden's position that there should be a 6 week ceasefire. And he said Israel has put forward a forward leaning offer. Yes, she was definitely communicating to Hamas that they need to accept this deal. And Harris told reporters that the president and I have been aligned and consistent from the very beginning. So it's not even what she's claiming to be calling for.
No, it's true. But the problem is, again, though, you know, you got all of these war criminals trying to act as if they've got some kind of moral sensibility. They know they've been enabling this genocide. They know they've been enabling this ethnic cleansing. They know they are responsible. They have blood on their hands when it comes to the death of thousands and thousands of innocent Palestinians, especially Palestinian children. So it shifts to a strategic and tactical level. It's not at the moral level, not at the spiritual level. That's what's upsetting about Selma. See, Selma was not strategic and tactical and some kind of check on what my deepest convictions are after I check what the polls are. That's Biden. That's Harris. That's what's going on in Washington. No, Selma was about Black people who hated, terrorized, traumatized, straighten their backs up, willing to fight. Some of them almost killed, like Brother John Lewis. Now, John Lewis later on is going to make his move toward neoliberals. We won't get into that. But he was taking his stand. So you see again how the Biden administration just tries to hijack Black folk. Same is true with Martin Luther King Jr.'s founding of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, to redeem the soul of the nation. What does Biden do? That's my slogan, to redeem the soul of a nation. Martin Luther King Jr., James Lawson, Diane Nash versus Biden and Harris. Oh my God, that's like Aretha Franklin versus some junior high singer in a choir or something, you see. But they try to pose and posture as if they can get away with their pathetic formulations. And no, the veil has been ripped off of not just the Biden administration, but the American empire. I mean, the American empire is in deep decay. Most empires begin to really dissolve when they have moments of such violence that the bare reality, the raw power that they have is exposed to the world, exposed to their own citizens. I think one of the audiences of Sister Harris was really Michigan, 100-some thousand folk in Michigan, not all, you know, persons, Arabs and Muslims. You had a number of white students, Black students, brown students. You had slices of the working class, significant numbers of women of different colors. This electoral strategy, back to the strategic again, ain't got nothing to do with the precious humanity of Palestinians. It was just a few weeks ago, Sister Harris was saying, no conditions whatsoever. We support whatever Israel does. No conditions whatsoever. She was speaking her heart there. That's what she was honest. Very much so. Because that's where that's where she is. That's where Biden is. That's where Austin is. Austin, in its interesting way, you know, he's got a little bit of ambivalence every once in a while. But in the end, boom, he comes down right with the empire and knows he's wrong. Knows that history is going to reveal them as the enabling of not just war crimes, not just crimes against humanity, but crimes of genocide. Now, that is more the perspective of Selma, Alabama. See, the folk who marched in Selma in 65, I know your beloved mother down there in SNCC with her courageous visionary self and artistic sensibility. You see, everybody knew, you know, when Heschel went down there, what was he told? You gonna die, man. Sylvie, his blessed wife, she was told, your husband's gonna die. Susanna, your father's going to die. And what the hell she'll do? I'm going down anyway. You see, this is qualitatively different than anything you could get out of a Biden administration in regard to not just Gaza, but the same thing is true with Wall Street. Same thing is true with mass incarceration. Same thing is true with poverty. Same thing is true with ecological crisis. You can see this kind of posing and posturing across the board. And we have to call it for what it is. And I'm glad you and Brother Aaron and the others have been doing that. I mean, you got, you know, Brother Tim Black. I mean, it's a whole little group of y'all doing very good jobs. Just Amy and the others. It's wonderful.
I wanted to ask you about your comments, very moving comments about Aaron Bushnell. I wanted to play something that you said, and people were amazed that this got on CNN. I mean, every time that you're on CNN, I think people are amazed that they let you say the stuff that you say, just because it's so critical of empire. But here, let's play this clip of you on Dana Bash talking about Aaron Bushnell, who, of course, self-immolated in protest of the genocide in Gaza.
Well, we shall see. But I mean, part of the problem is we can't reduce what's going on in Gaza to some kind of electro-political strategy. I mean, we've seen the example of our dear brother, Aaron Bushnell. When he set himself on fire and killed himself, what was he saying? These are moral issues and moral causes. These are not just brands and strategies and tactics. And as you know, Sister Dana, so much American politics is about strategy and tactic. These are deeply moral and spiritual issues having to do with arbitrary power being used. And when I hear Sister Rashida say, well, Biden is not hearing us. No, Biden is enabling the killing of us. That's what's taking place here. And so you can imagine it. My Arab brothers and sisters in Dearborn and other places are saying, we're not just pieces to be moved on a chessboard. These are our families. This is mama and daddy. This is grandmama and granddaddy. It reminds me in some ways of the rabbis who marched in the early 40s, led by the great Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. And FDR wouldn't even come out of the White House. He sent Henry Wallace, and those rabbis were sitting there saying, look, massacres are taking place. War crimes are taking place. Crimes against humanity. Genocide is taking place. What did the White House do in the early 40s? Nothing at all, hardly. Why? Because it was an electro-political issue. The Jewish vote didn't mean X. The Jewish vote didn't mean Y. These are human beings, and America is enabling the killing of them. So it is now in 2024. Where is the space for truth, justice, love in a moment of electoral politics and barbarity? That's the question.
I wanted to ask you about the tradition of self-immolation, which is something I think a lot of people don't know about.
Mm-hmm. I usually go back in the history of the West to Cato the Younger, of course, who killed himself, but he stabbed himself as he saw Julius Caesar beginning to not just take over, but become hegemonic with the Roman Empire and the Roman Republic was going under. Now, of course, you know, Cato's no serious progressive. You got Spartacus and the others who bring a critique to bear on him, given the slaves oppressed in the Roman Republic itself. But Cato himself, I mean, they got a major statue of Cato in the Louvre. You know, and he's reading about Socrates' suicide, drinking of the hemlock. There's a long tradition of people who pay the ultimate price by killing themselves in order to bring attention to a higher cause. It could be a suffering of a people. It could be a particular issue. And that is a noble thing. And you bear witness, and sometimes bearing witness takes the form of martyred. And so that's crucial. Like the very beginning of Franz Rosenzweig's great Star of Redemption. He begins with witness. He comes out of biblical Hebrew scripture. Witness as a thinker, as one in solidarity with oppressed people. And you may pay the ultimate price. And sometimes it's a form of taking your life. Sometimes it's a form of the state taking your life. Sometimes it's a form of vigilantes taking your life, but you pay the ultimate price. But usually, you see, the people I've been, as you know, intensely attacked by even associating my dear brother Aaron Bushnell with martyrdom, but I remain convinced that he was a martyr. Usually those who are saying what they're saying about me are so thoroughly indifferent to the suffering he's trying to bring our attention to.
And so, or worse than indifferent in some cases.
Well, they're actually enabling and promoting. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. You know, and I see Brother Dershowitz and all these other folk who are just providing cover for genocide, providing rationalization for ethnic cleansing, and then say, this man has nothing to do with being a martyr. Well, who are your martyrs? Soldiers in the IDF, who are your martyrs? Tell me who your martyrs are. And you could almost say, tell me who your martyrs are. And I could find out a whole lot about who you are. You know what I mean? I mean, even as a Christian, did Jesus really commit a certain kind of self-suicide? Well, it's certainly God committed a kind of deicide from a theological point of view, to come into such a cold and cruel world and be willing to die so that God becomes not a king on a throne, but a servant of poor people, and put to death by the Roman Empire for running out the money changers of a temple, the largest edifice east of Rome, with 300 Roman imperial troops protecting that temple. When you go in anyway and turn the tables over in the name of the poor, not out of hating the rich, but hating greed, hating oppression, hating injustice. Is that a martyr? Yes, it is. Was Peter a martyr? Yes, he was. Now, Aaron, I'm not saying there's anywhere near Jesus. None of us near Jesus. As a Christian, I got my own biases about this thing, you know. But certainly he will be remembered as somebody who paid the ultimate price based on his commitment to a cause and this attempt to reduce his action to some kind of psychological imbalance, a moral illness, and so forth. No, we've got to begin with the sociopaths and the psychopaths who themselves continually engage in massive massacring of children and human beings. What kind of human being does that? They're the ones who ought to be the primary subject matter of any kind of serious psychological analysis, let alone their role in an imperial system, let alone their role in a predatory capitalist system, let alone their role in a patriarchal system, and last but not least, their role in a deeply racist system, because you and I know that if Palestinians were doing to Jews what Israelis are doing to Palestinians, Biden and Harris would support the Jewish version of Hamas. They would be looking for funds. They would support those freedom fighters who were resisting against Palestinian occupation and Palestinian domination. But you flip it over, and lo and behold, it's anything it wants without accountability. And when it reaches the point where it looks like we might lose an election, we're going to drop some food. Even though we allow the bombs, we give them more money, we give them more bombs. The level of contradiction, hypocrisy, incongruity, unbelievable cruelty.
While their food truck waiting to get in. Sorry, exactly. That's the thing. If we wanted to use... It would just require political pressure. I've spoken to Craig McIver, who's that very courageous former UN official, human rights lawyer, who resigned over the UN's failure to protect Palestinians. And he said that, you know, the airdrops are just a fig leaf and the human rights community doesn't take it seriously. They think it's a lie because there are all these trucks waiting to be let in. And the issue is Israel's not letting them in. I wanted to ask you more about your kind of moral framing of Hamas. But before we get to that, I just wanted to share your tweet about Aaron Bushnell, which was, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but considered controversial by some, although I don't see why. But you wrote, "Let us never forget the extraordinary courage and commitment of Brother Aaron Bushnell, who died for truth and justice. I pray for his precious loved ones. Let us rededicate ourselves to genuine solidarity with Palestinians undergoing genocidal attacks in real time. Hashtag Aaron Bushnell, hashtag Free Palestine." And you were asked by Pierce Morgan, whose show you went on the other day, and I just wanted to show a short clip from that, because I thought you had some very powerful words there.
Okay. I just want to read you what Ben Shapiro said about your tweet, though, about Aaron Bushnell. He said, our political environment is facilitating dangerous insanity. It is easy enough for people like Cornel West to celebrate the pseudo-heroism of disturbed people lighting themselves on fire, but both the mentally disturbed and our society pay the price for such celebration. I mean, he has a point, doesn't he? You wouldn't want other people to go and set fire to themselves and kill themselves like he did, would you?
Brother, I have deep libertarian sensibilities. I believe that people make choice and they have to take responsibilities. They make decisions. They have to deal with the consequences. I do not promote people killing themselves. Not at all. But people do a number of different things. I would want to ask Brother Shapiro. He's talking about there's heroes in the Israeli Defense Forces, many of whom are killing innocent children. Do I think that's sick? Yes. That is morally bankrupt. It is spiritually empty. It is ethically vacuous. I come right back at Shapiro. Your heroes happen to be engaged in terrorist activity against Palestinians. And he's going to say, Aaron's not a hero. Aaron is a particular person who exercised a certain kind of witness and ended up taking the form of killing himself in order not to bring attention to himself, but to try to give some sense of urgency for a genocide taking place. Do you believe Aaron Bushnell? That's what Brother Shapiro doesn't want to focus on. Do you believe Aaron still wants to focus on his indifference to the suffering of Palestinians in the form of attacking
me? Okay, let me ask you.
How cowardly can you get, my brother?
Do you believe that Aaron Bushnell is a martyr?
Well, martyr and witness really have the same root, as you know, in the Greek. And martyr means someone who pays an ultimate cost tied to a higher cause. I believe trying to bring attention to genocide, bring genocide to a close, is a higher cause. And I believe that his actions was trying to bring attention to that higher cause. So, yes, he is a martyr. Absolutely.
Dr. West, always good to talk to you.
I love that clip because it's great to watch you in real time go through the steps of determining whether he was a martyr. Because you kind of broke it down. You were obviously didn't have it like pre-worked out. And then you just figured out, well, let's see, what was he doing? What does martyrdom mean? What does witness mean?
You are absolutely right about that. You are absolutely right. See, that's what your artistic sensibility as a great comic artist, that right on the spot, instantaneously trying to work something through, and people can see it. Almost they can see the process in your heart, mind, and soul. And you come out, and when you come out, you say what you mean, and you mean what you say. You know what I mean? Again, you're not posing, posturing, some kind of formula or some kind of algorithm. You're in process of working and thinking it out.
Right. And I loved what you said about Ben Shapiro. Going back to what you were saying about show me your heroes and I'll, you know, if you show me your heroes, you're showing me yourself, paraphrasing what you said earlier. But as you said, these people are, I would say, more than indifferent. I mean, I think some of them actually revel in the genocide and destruction. So their moral compasses are totally off. So it's actually in some ways refreshing or a good sign when you're being smeared by them, because you certainly wouldn't want to be praised by them.
I mean, you think of just the level of blindness when you say, well, Brother West is promoting and unleashing an authorization of violence because of his characterization of Brother Aaron. And if we got genocide in real time taking place and they can't say a mumbling word about it other than supporting it, other than justify it, other than rationalize it, can't say a word against it. And yet I become the promoter of violence. It's like, oh my God, that's just sheer pathology.
Yeah. And another clip that you had with Piers Morgan, and Piers Morgan loves to ask people if they'll condemn Hamas. Yes or no, yes or no, yes or no. And here's a clip of you asking Piers Morgan to answer a question, yes or no. Let's see how that goes.
Oh,
well, they've emerged. Oh, look, let's be clear.
And this is Piers Morgan talking about Hamas when he says they
emerged as a terrorist organization committing acts of mass terrorism. I mean, that's what they are.
No, Hamas is a counter-terrorist group responding to the terrorism of the IDF and responding to the terrorism of the Israeli state.
a counterterrorist group can commit war crimes, brother, but they didn't initiate it at all. Mm. If they're founded in 1988 and the terrorism began in 1948 with the State of Israel, that's 40 whole years. Yeah, and let's keep in mind.
Yeah, I think it's a stretch to call them counter. I think it's a stretch.
The PLO, undermine secular nationalism, promote fundamentalist Islam as a way of dividing Palestinians. That's why Netanyahu allowed for Gaza, allowed for Hamas to gain access to the money from Qatar and others.
Yeah, I agree.
To keep the Palestinians divided, and therefore not having to move to deal with the suffering.
Dr. West, there are many things that we would find agreement on about the way Palestinians have been treated for a very long time. It has been a completely unacceptable occupation.
Well,
it should not have dragged...
Hang on.
Let me finish.
Vicious,
I know.
Ugly.
Let me finish. But the idea that you categorize Hamas after October 7th as counter-terrorists is ridiculous. They are terrorists. And they should be called what they are. Anyway.
Let me ask you this. Do you think the IDF is terrorists when they kill innocent Palestinians? Do you
believe that? I think it depends.
Yes or no, my brother? Yes or no?
Well, okay. I would ask you this. If you were.
Yes or no?
No.
Yes or no?
Hang on.
You're uncensored.
Yes,
my brother.
But I've been asked this question before. I have actually tweeted in 2014.
Which I thought was so refreshing because you never hear people ask yes or no. Is Israel terrorists or what they're doing terrorists? And of course, you can't, if you say what Hamas did, what Israel's doing is not terrorism. And you've been very consistent. You distinguish between killing civilians and killing combatants,
right?
Which is a framework of international human rights law. But I thought it was interesting that you got him unable to respond to this, even as he, on almost every episode he's done on the subject, corners people with a yes or no. And then he tries to throw it back to you with a challenge. And this was great, too.
You know, tweeted that what Israel was doing then was bordering on terrorism. I'm not afraid of using that analogy.
Bordering on terrorism.
Yeah, but hang on.
The children are being killed, right?
Yes, of course. There were children killed on October the 7th.
Which you
I have
condemn.
Serious misgivings about what's happening currently in Gaza, like most people. But what I would say to you, if you were the head of the Israeli government on October the 7th, out of interest, what would your response have been to that horrendous terror attack?
Well, I'll tell you the answer to that question, but I don't know why you just can't say the IDF is terrorists, killing some innocent people, bordering on, it's wrong. No, why are you uncensored? You're a free man. Tell the truth from your soul.
I'm telling the truth.
Let me tell you what I would do if I was in Israel. I would end the occupation. I would end the siege. I would say I'm committed to Palestinian dignity. I'm committed to Palestinian equality. And we Palestinians and Israelis, we Jews and Palestinians, we're going to learn how to live together in the context of equality and dignity. We're going to have Jewish safety. We're going to have Jewish security. That's the very end and aim of Israel. We'll never see an annihilation of Jews. We'll never see another massacre or holocaust of Jews. But we'll never see annihilation and massacre and vicious attacks on Palestinians either. That's what I would do.
Well, on that,
not just
okay.
Head of Israel. That's what I'll do in the White House, brother. That's what I'll do in the White House. And I'll explain to American people why it is that Biden and Harris and others continue to enable this genocide. And then when they finally say ceasefire, they act like we ought to give them a moral prize.
I appreciate your moral clarity there in response to that often rhetorical question of what is Israel supposed to do?
Just to tell the truth. Undermine the conditions that make possible this kind of domination, occupation. Make sure you keep track of the humanity, beginning with the least of these, that's biblical for me, which are the oppressed. And then make a space in which oppressed and oppressor can, in fact, call into question that distinction and attempt to live a life together. And that's why I'm fairly convinced that that the two-party solution, really, even again, that Biden and Harris are talking about, is relatively empty. It's too late. There's too many settler colonialists who've taken the land, so that you end up giving the Palestinians something like a Bantustan state, a highly marginalized entity of which there's still Israeli supremacy, so the Israeli will continually have them under surveillance, have them under their power with a little small entity they call a state and then say you ought to be satisfied with it. No, I'm not going for that. That is, it's very interesting to me that people of, I was just in Dallas at a wonderful, wonderful gathering at a rally, and people had a big, again, controversy about this phrase, to the river, to the sea. And you said, well, right now, you've got apartheid from the river to the sea. No, not controversial. But when you say river to the sea, oh, you mean annihilation of Jews? No, no, we're not going. We don't have any patience for annihilation of Jews or anybody else. But if the alternative is river to the sea with apartheid versus river to the sea with a secular state, which one has a moral character to it? Which one has ethical content to it? How do we deal with these non-negotiables, what I call non-negotiables, which is Palestinian dignity and equality and Jewish security and safety? There will never be Israeli safety. There'll never be security for Jewish brothers and sisters as long as they are occupying, dominating, subjugating, marginalizing, and degrading, and outright hating Palestinians. Then they get upset when Palestinians hate back. I don't believe people ought to hate at all, but I know people do hate back. You terrorize, people do terrorize back. There's no doubt about that. And we've had these discussions in the Black Freedom Movement, my dear sister. You know, was, you know, Nat Turner and Denmark Vesey and John Brown, white brother, were they justified in killing white innocent children? Well, that's a serious debate that Frederick Douglass and Du Bois and others had. We got disagreements with that. I tend to be very, very purist about that. I don't think we should ever kill innocent people, ever kill innocent children. If you do, you ought to recognize that's a crime against humanity. You don't just do it and walk around as if this is just what resistance is all about. No, you got to make some moral distinctions. Are you going to end up killing innocent Palestinians who disagree with you? You're going to end up killing innocent Arabs who disagree with you. You got to have some moral corpus. But I do understand, and here Frantz Fanon's point is a powerful one, that you don't have control over this thing. And when violence is so deeply inculcated in the structures of a society, the oppressed are going to speak the language of those who are coming at them. Malcolm X has a powerful point. Frantz Fanon does too. And they're not the only two. So you have to be cognizant of that. But I'm holding on to moral, some morality and spirituality. And of course, as you know, sometimes my left comrades say, oh, Brother West, are you talking about both sides? I can't stand this both sideism. I understand that point.
Right.
You can use both siderism, downplaying the nature of the domination, downplaying the structures of oppression, and downplaying the fact that resistance movements of oppressed people takes a variety of different forms. There's no doubt about that. Now, I'm not a pacifist like Martin and Kenya Tutu and others. I believe combatants can kill other combatants, and you try to kill other combatants. But of course, you know, going back to the genocide against brothers and sisters in the Congo under Leopold in Belgium, you're just killing innocent folk in such a massive way that people say, well, come on, Brother West, man. Everybody's killing innocent folk. Everybody's going to do that. Well, why you have all of this equivocation and so forth? I said, no, you know, I'm not necessarily better than anybody in any deep sense. I just want to have a witness that has some kind of morality and spirituality tied to it, even as I'm cognizant of just how vicious and ugly and bestial and barbaric these genocides and ethnic cleansings and subjugation and colonization has in fact been. And you can imagine, you know, that's the kind of thing we could talk about a long, long time.
I think there's a difference between moral consistency and both sidesing. I think the danger is if you say life is precious, there's a difference between killing civilians and killing combatants, and both sides are doing it, which is not what you're saying. I mean, I've heard you say that you have a larger indictment. I believe that was your word. Your indictment is larger of Israel because they are committing more of these crimes. But I think that, and you also are pointing out that, what do you think is going to happen when you are inflicting violence on a daily level and a structural level? How do you expect people to respond? And there's a lot of nonviolent resistance from Palestinians. No one ever talks about that.
That's exactly right. I mean, in my Radical King book, I make the connection between the, I mean, the Antifada, the first Antifada was nonviolent. Second Antifada was primarily nonviolent. And of course, we also have to tell the truth about the ways in which the American Empire and the Israeli elite tried to repress, suppress, and crush PLO, which was a secular leftist movement, which was nationalist but tied to a leftist analysis, and used fundamentalist Islam as a replacement, thinking that somehow that was going to be either easier to control or it was somehow going to be something that allowed them to get away with their colonial position, their position as, in this case, oppressors vis-a-vis the oppressed. And it backfired on us, part of the blowback. We saw it in Afghanistan. You see it in the Middle East. You see it in Egypt, across the Middle East. You crush the leftist possibilities. You support. And that's Saddam Hussein and bin Laden, all of them were on CIA pay list. Because they were being manipulated by these imperial powers, a Senate in Washington, D.C. And then it backfires on them, and they become anti-American empire, which is not anti-imperialist as a whole, because they could be tied to other kind of imperialism. And that's a complicated thing, too. That's a very complicated thing, too. Iran itself, you know, can suppress other Muslim brothers and sisters, especially precious young Iranian women, right? So they could be in solidarity with the Palestinians. And I'm in solidarity with Palestinians, but I'm in solidarity with women life freedom over against the mullahs. Well, see, that gets complicated too. And again, a lot of leftist comrades say, oh, Brother West, we don't follow you. We don't follow you. I said, this is my witness. I'm not trying to fit your leftist pattern. I'm concerned with oppressed people around the world. Same would be true in other...
And you're not calling for regime change.
What, in Iran?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, in Iran,
regime change from the outside, I would say.
Oh, from the outside. Well, I would want the freedom for oppressed people wherever they are. I don't want to fall into State Department talking points, but I would certainly want to lift the domination and oppression of the Iranian people. There's no doubt about that. But that is very different than a State Department that's just using the Iranians as these little pieces on a chessboard. I'm concerned about the lives and the quality of lives of people who are living under repressive policy, no matter where they are. It could be in China. It could be in Russia. It could be in Iran. It could be in Uganda with gays and lesbians. It could be Black folk dealing with mass incarceration in the States. It can be working people in Germany. It's an international view that has a certain kind of moral consistency that flies in the face of any narrow ideological analysis.
I wanted to know if you could talk. A lot of people know about Christian liberation theology, but you as a theologian, could you talk a little bit about the prophetic social justice movements that stem from Judaism and Islam?
Yes, indeed. I mean, one is that in terms of my own life, you know, I don't exist without Malcolm X, who was prophetic Muslim. I don't exist without Fannie Lou Hamer, Martin Luther King Jr., prophetic Christian. I don't exist without Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, prophetic Judaic figure, which is to say that they do not speak on behalf of the whole tradition. The dominant forms of religious traditions tend to be ones that accommodate themselves to empire and capitalism, patriarchy, homophobia, transphobia. The dominant forms accommodate themselves. There's no doubt about it. It's the prophetic forms that are critical of it. And so the names that I mentioned, you know, for every Martin Luther King Jr., even when they were on strike, we called for the strike in Montgomery. That was basically a little less than 20 churches out of hundreds. It was not like the whole Black church followed this young minister, Black minister, because Rosa Parks had the courage to sit down and all to stand up for justice. No, is a slice. When Heschel went down to Selma, the mainstream Jewish folk, and I'm sitting there looking at Jewish Theological Seminary right now, because I live right on 122nd Street here, that they thought he lost his mind. You know, and it's like, good God, I can imagine your mother, you and Brother David Weiner, two of the most distinguished graduates of the great high school, Dalton, you all throwing yourself in the liberation movement. And they losing their mind. What's going on? You got to cut against the grain of one's own families and one's own traditions and one's own communities if you're going to be true to any serious allegiance to truth and beauty and love and justice and so forth. Even Hinduism is so tied to caste. And caste is one of the most vicious forms of oppression that we know over thousands of years. But there are some Hindus who are trying to call into question the caste system and hold on to the prophetic elements of Hinduism. Hindus for Human Rights, Gandhi at his best. Now, Gandhi did not hit caste head on. He was, in the end, he was very complicitous with it, but he had his own ways of talking about it to try to transcend it. He was just unsuccessful in doing that. But that's true for any religious tradition.
And shifting gears to your campaign, where are you on the campaign? Where are you with ballot access? And how do you respond to the often regurgitated talking point that you're helping Trump?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, one, the good news is the Aurora Party in Alaska, first ones, helped get us on the ballot. Progressive Party, Oregon. But it's on the ballot. United Citizens, South Carolina, that's all Black Party, put us on the ballot. And that's fascinating because Alaska, you know, that's very much vanilla affair. You know, it's National Hockey League more than National Basketball Association. Whereas United Citizens is National Basketball Association. So you got Black folk, white folk, all in the same band, coming together, solidarity. Oregon, disproportionately vanilla too, and we're on the move. We really, you know, do have the signatures in place for the most part in Hawaii, and Utah, and Nebraska. It's just a matter of making it official, getting across the line. So we're on the move, and I've been spending some good time in Texas and Michigan, and boy, we got some magnificent volunteers on the move. Same is true in New York, but if peace and freedom come through in California. And that's a nominating process, and I have to go through that whole process. So we really are on the move. As you know, a number of these states don't even open up for a number of weeks. And so it's a matter of as soon as they open the gate, we move in. And so we really are on the move. We should be, I hope, on at least 20-some states by the end of May, and maybe about 35, 40 by the end of the summer. And we hope to be on every state. The tough ones are Texas and California and New York. Oh, my God. New York. 42 days, 46,000 signatures. And then the Democratic Party elites are making decisions for the most part of which signatures are valid. So if they say 46,000, you better give them 90. Because they're going to invalidate about one out of two. That's part of the challenges we've already had in a couple of states. But that's part of the corporate duopoly that I only talk about defending democracy, be concerned about democracy. You talk about ranked choice voting, they start shaking in their boots. You talk about voices from the outside, they talk about repression, but they're supposed to be so committed to democracy. You say, please, please, we can see your hypocrisy there. But the crucial thing is that we can't give up. We can't be discouraged. That's the crucial thing. There's so much coming at you. And it comes from everywhere, as you know. You got the gangsters on the right with Trump, neo-fascists to the core, pushing the country toward another civil war and proud about it in some way. And then you've got genocide enabled by Biden administration, let alone mass incarceration that he was architect of, let alone the pro-Wall Street policies, let alone steel not standing in the way of the organized greed of the fossil fuel industry and so forth. What a choice. You know, what a choice. You know, Civil War II and World War III.
And what can you do so that regardless of what happens with your campaign, you're building a movement? Because one thing that we saw that Bernie Sanders did is he inspired so many people and he shifted the Overton window and he made things that were presented as radical but were actually popular. He shed light on that. But then when he conceded, the left, which was unified around him, kind of fell apart. So what are you doing to try to create a movement that exists parallel to your campaign, but also exists regardless of what happens to your campaign? Thanks again for listening to The Katie Helper Show. To hear the rest of that discussion, please join the Patreon at patreon.com/The Katie Helper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Helper Show. If you like the show, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And as always, we remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. Our show is produced by me, Katie Helper. Brad Bloom is our audio engineer and an associate producer on the show. Our researcher is Joshua Bregman. And our theme song is by the band Cordova. See you next time!